Okay, so I'll start. Hello, my name is Petr Zemek, and I'm going to give a presentation on the topic look ahead k greater than 1 in LL and LR translators. If you are not sure what some of these terms like look ahead, don't worry, I'll explain them in a minute. I would like first review some basic terms, because these terms are crucial for this presentation, so in order to understand it, you must understand these terms. So, an LL parser is a top-down parser which parses the input from left to right and creates a leftmost derivation of the sentence. Examples of LL parsers are recursive descent parser or predictive parser, which uses the LL table. And LL grammar will be or is a grammar on which you can build some LL parser. Now, we have also LR parsers. These are bottom-up parsers, and they parse the input again from left to right, but they construct a reverse of rightmost derivation of the input. And again, we have LR grammars. So these are grammars on which some LR parser can be built. By the way, do you know who introduced LR parsers? LR parsers? It was Professor Knuth in 1965, yeah. Oh, which is kind of interesting. Now, for the first mysterious term, look ahead. What is a look ahead? Look ahead is the number of input tokens which which the parser uses to decide which rule it should apply. So, if we take as an example LL parser, which I think you all should know how it works, so it has a non-terminal on the top of the pushdown, and it has an input token, and it must decide which rule from all possible rules with A on the left-hand side it can apply. So it checks the LL table, where are non-terminals as rows and input tokens in columns, and he checks the intersection of the row with the non-terminal and the column with the input token, and that's where the rule should be. So take a look here. There is an example of LL2 table, which uses a look ahead of size 2 instead of 1. So in our lectures, we always got separate columns for each token. So there was a divider here and here, and ID was only once in the table. But now, in the case of LL2 table, we use two consecutive tokens to decide which rule we should apply. So, for example, if the non-terminal on the top of the pushdown is A, and we get ID and plus as two consecutive tokens on the input, we should apply rule 2. And as for the notation, LLK and LRK will denote a parser which uses look ahead of size k. Now, there is a difference between what is called recognizer or a parser and a translator. What recognizer does, you give it some source code and a grammar, and it tells you whether you can generate this source code by this grammar. So its answer is either yes or no. But a translator, which a compiler is a translator, it translates the source code into some functionally equivalent target code. So you see that it is more than just a recognizer, because yeah, you care whether the answer is yes or no, but if it is yes, you want some code to be generated. You don't want the parser to tell you that you should generate it by yourself. Now, there is a hierarchy of language families which will be in our interest. There are three main classes, which is the class of all LL languages, which is colored in yellow. Then there is a family of all deterministic context-free languages, colored in green, which are languages that are accepted by deterministic pushdown automata. And there is a family of all context-free languages. Now let's take it. Let's take a more detailed look on this hierarchy. It can be shown that there are some languages which are LL2 but are not LL1, and that there are languages that are LL3 but not LL2. So we got an infinite hierarchy of language families resulting from LL grammars. The next interesting thing is that there are some deterministic context-free languages which cannot be parsed with an LL parser for any arbitrary k. Now, the third interesting thing is that it was proved that the family of all deterministic context-free languages can be parsed using LR parsers, more precisely LR1 parser, which was proved is equivalent with any other parser with higher k. So if you give me some LR k grammar, we can convert it to an equivalent LR1 grammar. So this is the difference between the class of all LL languages and LR languages in terms of recognition power. Now for the core of my presentation, why should we use k greater than 1? Why should we bother? Because currently, in practice, LL and LR translators with looking at k equal to 1 has been almost exclusively used because of these three claims. The first claim is that we can apply some transformation techniques like factorization to transform grammar which use higher k to a grammar which use lower k. The second claim is that LR1 equals LR for any k in terms of recognition power, so why should we bother there? And the fourth claim is that k greater than 1 might not be possible in terms of space and time requirements. Now, there are some problems with these claims. I claim that the first claim is often impractical, then the second claim is not true in case of translators, and then the third claim is outdated. And I will go through all of these claims and show where the problem is. So for the first claim, grammar transformation. On the picture, you can see a fragment of an LL2 grammar for a fragment of the C language, which should generate statements. A statement in the C language can begin with a statement label, ID and colon, or it can be an expression. An expression can begin with ID and equal an expression, that's assignment. So the problem there is, if we have stat or as the topmost non-terminal and ID as the input token, LL1 grammar does not have any way how to decide which rule it should apply in this case, because both expression and stat begins stat and first expression begins with ID. So in this case, this grammar is LL2, not LL1. If you have a look ahead of two symbols, you will have ID, and then you can decide whether the second symbol is colon or the assignment symbol. So this grammar can be transformed into an equivalent LL1 grammar using factorization, but there may be some problems. So I claim that LL2 grammar can be more convenient for the programmer or the developer of the grammar. Because, for example, where would you put semantic actions in a transformed grammar? Because it would retain almost none of its original structure. So this could be a problem. Then it may be practically impossible because expression occurs in all parts of the grammar, or ID can occur in all parts of the grammar. And there may be other reasons why transformation techniques might not be possible in practice. Now this argument is rather theoretical but uncontroversial, but let's check it. There are people who claim that semantic actions can decrease power of a translator based on LR parsers. In terms of recognition power, in the title that LR1 equals LR, LRK greater than 1, it is true. But in translator, that might not be the case. Here is a very simple example. There is an LR2 grammar which is not LR1. Why is that? There is an assumption that we can place semantic actions any place on the right hand side of a row. So you are perhaps used to put semantic actions at the end, at the very end of each row, but there are situations where you must put and must execute the action right before you you apply that rule. So in this case, if the start is in this case, if we have A as the first input token, so we are using look ahead of size 1, the parser does not have any way whether to know whether it should print this statement or it should not print the statement. So we need look ahead at least 2 to correctly translate a program according to this grammar. If you are wondering whether we can rewrite this part of the grammar in terms of always using semantic actions on the right hand side, we can rewrite it like this. There would be some non-terminal B, then these will be terminals A and X. Then here we will have A and Y, and we will have an epsilon rule which will have only an action. So this will lead in conflict in the LR parser. And it was shown by Broswell that in worst case, that is case where each rule is augmented by a rule on its left hand side, we get this, that LL1 equals LR, LR1, and this is a proper subset of LL2 equals LR2 and so on. However, this not happen often in practice. But it's a nice argument. And the last claim, which concerns space and time requirements, is look ahead k greater than 1 plausible in practice, because in theory, storing full look ahead requires exponential space, where t denotes the number of token types. So as it was not plausible earlier, it can be plausible today because of the following reasons. We have more memory. We have faster processors, and various techniques and heuristics were developed over time to handle this problem. So, for example, you can compute look ahead or decision information during parsing rather than computing it statically before parsing. Or there was a technique that used regular languages to make decisions. And one of the famous techniques is called linear approximate look-ahead, which reduces the exponential space into linear space. But it is a heuristic. So in most cases it worked, but there may be cases where it doesn't work. So it's only approximated look-ahead. But we have decreased the space requirements and time requirements, so this is nice. This technique is used in the ANTLR parser generator, so it is used in practice. Now, for the conclusion, I have shown you that there is a difference between recognizers and translators. So compilers are translators, and that there are practical needs for greater look-ahead. So, for example,
transformation techniques might be impractical, then the presence of action reduces the strength of LR parsers, or LR translators to be precise, and that with current computers and heuristics approaches, the use of k greater than 1 can be feasible. My presentation was based on this article. Okay, this is the end. I thank you for your attention and let me answer your questions.
Thank you. Any questions, please?
Can I ask, it's maybe off topic, but in the slide there you had the hierarchy of the context-free languages. Uh-huh. I was wondering if there is an algorithm that would generate LL3 language which is not LL2 and so on, LLN language which is not LLN-1.
Yeah. There is a way. There is a way. In the C language, you have a construction if else, and the problem is that in C you have if, then there is some condition, and there is a statement that should be executed when this expression is true. So there's a statement, and you might have an else clause, and another statement. The problem is in the situation where you have if statement, another if statement right here, if something, then statement 2. And you finish it with an else clause. I will write it. Right here, because the standard says that else clause matches the previous if statement. So there will be statement 3. But the parser, you cannot create LL grammar for this language feature. Because the parser cannot know whether you will use an else clause right here, or whether it will match here or it will match here. So now it would need infinite look ahead to get this information, because there might be an arbitrary number of symbols in this condition or tokens. So in this way, you can generate a grammar which is LLK, and it is not LLK minus 1. If you limit the number of tokens that can appear between the if clause and the else clause. Hmm. Yes. But there might be some other algorithms. But this is the general idea.
Thank you. Any more questions, please?
Maybe if I can, I have one more practical. Did you thought or think about data structures that are used or that are used for storage of LLK table with k greater than 1?
I didn't, but in this case, when you use a linear approximate look-ahead, it uses k tables instead of one big table.
Yeah, so the heuristic works like it picks up the right table from the k tables.
No, I will try to.
How it works? What's the principle?
Draw it. If you would have this information in one big table, it would be k dimensional to say. But in the case of linear approximate look ahead, it creates one table, second table. Let's suppose that we have k equal to 2. So it creates two tables, and here we have the input tokens. So A, B, C, and again A, B, C. Let's suppose that T have cardinality 3, that we have 3 input tokens. And there are some rows. And in case of linear approximate look ahead, it checks whether symbol A is can be generated as the first symbol of some rule. So it checks in the in this table it checks the first set whether this symbol can be generated as the first symbol of the rule it should apply. Then it checks the second table whether this symbol can be generated as the second symbol by using some rule. So it checks first table, second table, third table, and according to this decision, it makes the decision. The problem with this approach is that it checks the first table, but it then checks the second table, and it does not use the information from the first table, because there might be cases where you have
B, for example, because
the problem is that there is no contextual dependency between the first table and the second table. But I'm just thinking about the right example. I will take a look in this article. Set will be A, D, and C, B. So it will check whether it will have A as the input symbol. So it will check whether it fits in this first set. It fits there is an A. But also there is a in here, and this is the first set. This is the second set. So we have A as the first symbol in here, and second as the first symbol in here, and we have also, and we will have AD as the input. So A will be here and here, and D will be also here and here. So we will have.
I see the problem. Maybe only one additional short question. How many tables can you have? So what the space complexity? Is it also linear?
Yeah, in case of linear approximate look ahead, it's linear.
Also the space complexity, not only the time complexity.
I wasn't talking about time complexity. It was all space complexity.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So.
But it's reduced from the exponential time complexity, which I think will be needed in case of full look ahead.
Thank you.
Any more questions, please? Peter, if you, from a purely practical point of view, if you've got, say, would it make sense to have a semi-LL2 table? That is, you would have columns, and sometimes you would have just single symbols, and sometimes you would have pairs of symbols to decide which rule you should choose.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think this would make sense, because if you have the table for a full look ahead, you would have many empty spaces, and in some situations it does not matter whether you have A, B, C or A, C, D.
Right.
You just need to know that A is the first input symbol, and you don't care whether what's the rest.
I agree.
Peter,
go ahead.
We can use some .tag, or which is used in C++, SMAC, for example, some associative array. The key can be the string, which is the token.
You mean the input string or?
No, the key of the associative array.
Yeah, and this would be what?
The token. Token coded in a string. There can be the key A. It's
you mean this would be a key and this would be a key? I suppose we can use that. But I don't know what the complexity will be if there one there. I'm not sure whether there won't be any problems with this approach. But I suppose, we could use that.
I think that the problem is to find the right hashing function, because if you look on these problems, so very often the prefix of all strings is the same. Yeah, so it can be sometimes hard to find the right hashing function to have effective hash table to look in and to implement this table.
We can check the bigger one, the biggest prefix.
I think the only problem is the highest look ahead, and that all of them are on the same line. Yeah. I think, because I think this is trying to deal with the worst case, not the usual case.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I have an idea when you can look on the prefixes from on the suffixes instead of prefixes to compute the hash function. But I think there will be also some other problems, because otherwise it would be used all the time.
Because the full look ahead is not often implemented in practice, because these tables would get very huge, and the time complexity would be bigger than in this case linear. I think it's also linear in this case of linear approximate look ahead. There was a thesis, a PhD thesis, written on this topic. So if you are interested, you can check it.
By whom?
By Terence J. Parr.
Oh, okay.
And he's one of the authors of the AMTLR parser. So he and some other people implemented the linear approximate look ahead, which he created in his thesis. They used it, and it works.
Okay, any more comments or questions, whatever? Well, if not, thanks very much. And our next speaker is...